This land is your land. This land is my land. From California to the New York Island, from the Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream waters, this land was made for you.
Hello, everyone. This is Basma Farhat of the People Speak Radio Show. Here we believe when the people speak, they make a difference. You can listen to the People Speak live on BBS Radio every Tuesday night at 8 to 9 o'clock Eastern Standard Time or by going to our website at www.thepeoplespeakradio.net. There you can also listen to our live shows or in our past shows on our iPod Ready Archive section. If you have a Nokia phone, you can also listen via satellite. Just go to the website for details. We have a great guest with us tonight. Naomi Wolf is the author of 7 books, including the New York Times bestseller, The End of America, which has been adapted as a feature-length documentary by award-winning filmmakers Annie Sundberg and Ricky Stern. I'm sorry. The Devil Came on Horseback is the name of the movie. Wolf?
Wolf. I'm sorry. That's their other movie. The name of the movie is The End of America.
Oh, okay.
The book.
All right. I'm sorry. Thank you for correcting me.
No problem.
Ms. Wolf is the co-founder of the Woodhull Institute for Ethical Leadership and the American Freedom Campaign, which is a very needed entity. Welcome to our show, Naomi. You're also right now currently the proud, and I say you need to be proud with us, Give Me Liberty, A Handbook for American Revolutionaries. That is the current book that you have put out. It is fantastic.
Thank you. Tell me more. No, I'm kidding.
I will, because I'll tell you. Now, ladies and gentlemen, for those of you that don't know, this is literally a handbook for understanding not only how revolutionaries can work within the system, but what the system is, how it benefits or doesn't benefit you. I mean, this is a step-by-step, blow-by-blow description, and I'm astounded that nobody had ever thought of this before, Naomi. Good for you.
Thank you so much. Well, I'm first of all, that's a fantastic summary. It really is, a third of it is like exactly what you need to do and know to take back power, to lead the country, to lead your community, to shape the debate, to write the op-eds, to start your own political party. You know, the sky's the limit in terms of citizen leadership. And the first section, you know, ties right into that because it's also a summary of the 7 core principles that America is supposed to be based on this beautiful legacy we have from the founding generation. And they definitely would have wanted the ordinary people, the people from all backgrounds, not just the privileged, white men whose names we know, the people who fell in love with the idea of liberty and risked their lives to bring this nation into being, they would have wanted citizens to draft the laws, run the debates, really step up to the plate and change the world. And it's definitely intended to be a handbook for concretely exactly how to do that.
Well, it is, and it's very concise, and that's the interesting thing, and that's the beauty of it. It's not only concise, it's very in brief, but very detailed, and I think it really is. For anybody that doesn't know of this book, you got to go out and get this book. This is important. This is important, I believe, for every citizen to have on their bookshelf, for every citizen to understand how our system works, why it is failing in what's happening. It's a book that, for me, Naomi, has renewed my faith in free press in a big way. And what I mean by free press is not the new sensationalist slapstick-style media. I mean informative, free-thinking media that makes a statement that informs, that tells people what really is happening. Thank you. What inspired you to write this book, Naomi?
That's a great question. It's definitely a sequel. What inspired me was that in 2007, I brought out a book called The End of America, the one you were mentioning earlier, that had the movie made out of it. And that book argued that there are these 10 classic steps that you always see when a would-be dictator is seeking to close an open society or crush a democracy movement, and that we were seeing those in the last 8 years. So it was definitely a letter of warning. In fact, the subtitle was Letter of Warning to a Young Patriot. And I traveled around the country last fall bringing out this message, and people were very receptive. They didn't say, you know, you're crazy. They said, this is exactly what we're seeing. And then their next question was, understandably, what do we do? So that's what led me to write Give Me Liberty, you know, End of America is a question and Give Me Liberty is the answer, hopefully. It's literally a blueprint. I studied other times and places, for instance, where people successfully fought back against tyranny and, you know, would-be dictators trying to suppress them. I looked at successful protest movements. I looked at successful citizen action, citizen engagement. And I looked at especially the psychological state of mind that we need to have in order to be effective and real revolutionaries in changing the world. And one reason I thought that was very important, in addition to all the practical steps, is that last fall I was very struck by how depressed many Americans were, in the sense that they felt very hopeless of being able to make a difference. They were emailing Congress, they were, you know, going to these marches, and they felt rightly that it wasn't making any difference at all. And so in Give Me Liberty, I wanted to give them the tools that would help them understand why those things actually didn't make a difference. You know, what I teach people is how to protest effectively, how to confront your congressperson, you know, much more effectively. It's like the secrets they don't want you to know. But also, I wanted people to have a psychology of liberty so that instead of feeling depressed and hopeless, they would feel like, well, I can do this, I can do that, I can raise money, I can run for Congress, I can, you know, start my own nonprofit. That's the kind of attitude that we need to have a really free society. I mean, I think we really saw that with this election. We were so close to losing this country. We were so close to stepping into the abyss if we had let this election be stolen again. But, you know, the last two were stolen. It's been well documented. But ordinary citizens kind of woke up in time, and they were monitoring the vote. They were, you know, watching the vote. They were videoing the vote, and they were organizing and getting their reports to voters' rights organizations. And that kind of I'm going to draw a line mentality saved this election and kept us from, you know, really a fate worse than death.
Well, I understand. I want briefly to let everybody know that you can call in at 877-489-6350 or toll free in the U.S. and Canada at 888-228-4494 or text or email our messages to our website, and we will ask Naomi to answer these questions. You said Sarah Palin in one article is the muse in a closing society.
Yeah. Well,
what
do you mean by that? Well, I'm actually really relieved that article kind of made it out there into the discourse. I was seeing that she was surrounded by Rove advisors and that she was using Rove's sound bites and really carrying water for policies that were Rove's and Cheney's and not John McCain's. And so my analysis was that, you know, often in a closing society you see a cabal, you know, that they're willing to hold elections, but they make sure the election is corrupted and that their own figurehead gets in. And so my analysis was that they were basically, I mean, I hate to say this, but John McCain's age and illness, the demographic doesn't have, the actuarial tables are not necessarily so long in terms of longevity. And so my analysis was that they were counting on a Palin presidency and that she was going to be the Evita figure, you know, that she was going to be basically working for Rove and Cheney and Halliburton and continuing the same policies. And I'm glad, you know, I'm really glad that argument seemed to have gotten picked up in the debate because it was an important one. I think people kind of realized, good Lord, it's not going to be change, you know, voting these people in. It's going to be more of a buildup of a police state. I mean, she said things like she made fun of Barack Obama for, you know, not wanting to torture prisoners. It's things like that. You know, those are not just...
I know, absolutely ludicrous. Now, you know, when you talk of that, you seem to single out in some parts of the article Sarah Palin from McCain. Do you think McCain had the same kind of heavy-handed bosses behind him, too?
I can't know that. I mean, I think these people are ruthless. You know, I think that they threaten people. I mean, we've got evidence of that. You know, Brad Sherman, a congressman from California, said that individuals from the White House were threatening individual congresspeople with martial law in America, the prospect of martial law if they didn't pass the bailout bill. We know that they've threatened people with IRS investigations. There's an aura of violence around them. I mean, they sent down a policy of torture from the top. I don't think you need to be directly threatened by these people to feel intimidated by them. I mean, among other things, they were able to, you know, because of the warrantless surveillance, they had the goods on every member of Congress if they wanted it. I mean, everyone's got secrets. Everyone's got, you know, a mood disorder, a drug addiction, or a, you know, an affair, or whatever. I mean, not everyone, but everyone's got something that they don't want to have out in public. And even if it was just knowing, you know, I mean, Angler, this book about Cheney, shows that, you know, individuals even on the Republican side have been intimidated by Cheney basically having their, you know, their secrets. So I have no evidence that he was being pushed around by these people, but these are very powerful interests. I mean, the point I made in both books is that there's trillions of dollars in profit at stake in shredding the Constitution and creating a police state, because then, you know, all these powerful corporations like Raytheon and Boeing and AT&T are investing in police state technologies. Now that the Cold War is over, that's where their investment is going. They need a war on terror. They need a police state. And there's no money to be made in defending the Constitution. So those lobbyists, you know, are pressing John McCain and Sarah Palin, and unfortunately they're pressing Barack Obama as well, which is why we need a continued citizens' army in support of the Constitution to be a counterbalance against that pressure.
So even though obviously you are in favor of the Obama administration, you do understand and still believe that the pressure is phenomenal and profound on these leaders to not necessarily do the will of the people.
It's so, so profound, and we cannot. It's so tempting right now, and I feel like such a Cassandra. Everyone, including me, just wants to have a glass of champagne and take a nap. Well, not everyone, but people, obviously, who are happy about Obama's victory. But that would be really foolish. There is a meta-politics. You know, there are now pressures more powerful than the President of the United States of America. And I guess what has really persuaded me that, you know, we have to continue to be vigilant and continue to organize in defense of liberty is watching two presidential campaigns up close as an informal advisor in 96 and a formal advisor in 2000. And, you know, Al Gore is a very decent guy. He's a real public servant. But, for instance, he wanted to give women work-family policies that made sense, and dads as well. And he couldn't because the Chambers of Commerce didn't want that. But there was no lobby of moms and dads. And so, you know, I watched him struggle with this special interest and not be able to say to them, well, I'm sorry, I can't, you know, I can't give you what you want because there are 30 million moms and dads who are organized in a lobby.
Mm.
It's there. They need us. I mean, look what the trial balloon that was floated just today is making me ill. I mean, just today I read on the AOL homepage that Obama is toying with the idea of, like, military commissions light here on U.S. soil, even though he wants to close Guantanamo. And he also floated the trial balloon of letting the CIA deviate from the Army Field Manual in interrogations, meaning have, you know, some kinds of abuse. Now, that's just shocking and wrong, but I know he doesn't want to do that, but I know that he's being pressured, well, certainly by people who don't want to be prosecuted for war crimes. And so he needs a counter-pressure of millions of us saying, no torture, we're not going to let you do this. Or else we're gonna be seeing some of the same themes recurring, unfortunately.
Well, we have a question from James in Washington, and I think it's very appropriate right now, because what James asks is, do you believe in the shadow government, and if so, how would you define it? Let me ask you and continue that question, Naomi. Would you consider the pressure being put on there by a shadow system of government that has a particular agenda or its own agenda that stands outside of of what is happening in on the field.
Yeah, I would be reluctant to use that language. I don't think it's necessary, and it's sort of unnecessarily mystifying. It's just special interests. It's just, you know, look at how many millions and millions of dollars these guys have to raise, or girls now, to run these presidential campaigns. Citizens can't raise all that money. AT&T can raise that money. Boeing can raise that money. Raytheon can raise that money. So it's just sort of unfettered capitalism, you know, intervening in a corrupt way in our representative democracy, which is why the practical steps in Give Me Liberty, like I recommend that we have a citizens' movement to pass a national referendum amendment to the Constitution so that we can have more power than the lobbyists, we the citizens. But, I wouldn't want to sort of make it creepier than it is.
I think that there's been a lot made of this conspiracy theory kind of dialogue and language, and I agree with you. I don't think it's a theory. I don't think it's a conspiracy. I think it's out in the open. I think it's in our face. And a lot of times we are not connecting the dots, or we are connecting the dots and not applying any of the techniques that you provide us with in the Give Me Liberty handbook. I mean, I just believe that sometimes we're looking at this stuff and seeing it, but not really seeing what it means.
Well, that's true. And to be fair to us, there's been an awful lot of secrecy and lack of accountability in the last 8 years. But let me take your very good point one step further, please. What I keep doing in Give Me Liberty and in my speaking these days is trying to remind people how powerful they are. Because there's a danger in thinking, these people are so powerful. You know, they run the world. They, you know, they've got these secret plans or whatever. It kind of leads you to a paralysis. And I guess I also wanted to point out that at that level, you don't need a conspiracy, meaning that at that level, how can I put this? People don't need to be sitting in some secret room somewhere in, like, the, you know, cellar of Skull and Bones to get things done. They need to have a game of tennis. You know, it's like...
or a game of ball.
It's just straight out there, you know, it's straightforward corruption or straightforward ignoring the will of the people. But I want to flip it around, you know, rather than being preoccupied with how overwhelmingly powerful these entities are. They are. I really want to draw people's attention to how extraordinarily powerful the citizens can be. I mean, look again and again. Look at, you know, the revolutionary generation. You know, these ordinary Americans, washerwomen, enslaved African Americans, you know, small farmers, small business people, stood up against the greatest empire in the world at that time, the British Empire, and they beat them. You know, again, moving forward, like 1989, In Eastern Europe, in East Germany, and in, you know, the Baltic states, ordinary citizens said, you know what, we're just going to flock out into the streets, and I teach people how to do this effectively, and we're just going to say no to the Soviet Union. And the Soviet Union, which was one of the two greatest superpowers at that time, could not contain them. The great lesson, you know, that I've learned from history, looking at both closing societies and successful efforts to fight back, is that when enough people say no in various creative ways with certain kinds of empowerment, which I hand people those tools, there is no power on earth that can keep them down. So I really am hoping that people, you know, will read Give Me Liberty and think, wow, there's so much I can do. You know, I have so much influence. I have so much voice. No matter who I am, a teacher, a mail carrier, a, you know, truck driver, I have so many opportunities to make a difference.
Well, you know, Naomi, you parallel this time period to the early period of Nazi Germany, and you call these parallels echoes, which I think is just a really brilliant, because somehow echoes, I think we have a caller on. Let me just get this out. And you say that in not so many words, these echoes are remnants of the Nazi regime. A lot of people have called that a very radical statement. Why is it not a radical statement? Why can you suggest that very openly without qualms?
Yeah, I very much stand by that assertion, and I'm Jewish, so I certainly don't use that language lightly, and I've lost relatives in the Holocaust. I know how serious invoking Germany is in that era. Mm-hmm. When I made that argument in the end of America, it wasn't rhetorical at all. I was just literally laying out example after example and putting them side by side and letting the reader decide for him or herself. Mm-hmm. And so I point out that, you know, literally, what did they do? Well, they, you know, created a paramilitary force. Well, we're creating a paramilitary force. Well, what did they do? They started to use language like terrorist to describe ordinary citizens. Well, we're doing that now. Well, what did they do? They started to, arrest journalists. Well, we're starting to do that. I mean, you know, one after another after another. And it's not just Nazi Germany. There are these 10 classic things that would-be dictators do always, whether they're on the left or the right. So I look at Mussolini, and I look at Stalin, and I look at East Germany in the 50s, and Pinochet, and the Chinese crackdown on the democracy movement. It's basic math. I mean, people who've read my books now, you know, read the news differently because they know that if they're reading about Myanmar or Thailand, they can recognize these 10 steps, and they can recognize them also, hopefully, now in the United States. For example, a news development, which is very serious, is that on October 1st, the 1st Brigade of the 3rd Infantry Division was deployed in the United States of America, a combat unit from Iraq, you know, redeployed from Iraq to the U.S. So this is the first time in 200 years we've had military on our streets, and it's a violation of posse comitatus, which is supposed to protect us from soldiers doing civilian policing. And NORTHCOM, you know, is changing its story about why they're here. And it's, if you know anything about, you know, the threat to liberty that this represents, you'd be very distressed and you know, working day and night to change the law and you know, send these people either home or back to a battlefield. But this is the kind of thing that I, and now two more divisions got imported after Barack Obama won. So this is the kind of thing that I would hope that readers of Give Me Liberty and The End of America would recognize immediately as, whoa, you know, let's not fall asleep on this one. And by the same token, I would hope that they would recognize that citizen activism of, you know, people saying, I'm not going to let you steal my vote, you know, photographing the vote, saying no, that they would recognize that as the revolutionary spirit that we're supposed to have. It's a different habit of thinking that I'm encouraging people to get into it. And I'm glad to say that many, many Americans are doing very exciting things in their own lives now and in their communities as a result of this shift in thinking.
We have with us Naomi Wolf, author of The End of America and The Beauty Myth, and the current author of Give Me Liberty, A Handbook for American Revolutionaries. Naomi, I believe we have a caller on the line. Caller, your name and your question for Naomi.
Yes, my name is Mike, and I'm in California. Naomi, we're in the virtual radio auditorium that is listening to this broadcast. It's broadcast over the airwaves as well as into internet auditorium. And everybody here who are fans of yours wish to wish you a happy birthday.
Oh,
all
so
of us
sweet.
Here. Okay. Get that out of the way.
Thank you.
We do have a question for you, Naomi. And
yes,
that
please.
is the appointment of Rahm Emanuel. I don't know if you've discussed this yet, and does that look like a sign of things to come?
I'm not sure what you mean. I mean, what's
Well, Rahm Emanuel, wasn't he the architect of NAFTA?
Of what? NAFTA?
NAFTA.
You know, you'll have to kind of forgive me. I'm so exclusively focused on constitutional issues. Good people.
Oh, then let me rephrase the question. Let me rephrase the question. If George Bush was responsible for all of that has occurred during the last 8 years in the way of everything bad, many things, in fact, impeachable, will Barack Obama also be equally culpable if he continues with what President Bush has done?
Well, certainly. If he continues with what Bush has done, absolutely he'll be just as culpable. I mean, I called my colleague David Fenton, who's the co-founder with me of the American Freedom Campaign, this morning. I was very distressed because I felt sick to my stomach that I just read that, you know, Barack Obama is even considering, oh, let's have some forms of torture, let's have some forms of abuse, we'll just give them better oversight. This is Nazi thinking, you know, this is Stalinist thinking. And I think one thing that I've said this on this whole journey, and I'm glad to say that I've been very much supported in taking this approach, is that this is a transpartisan issue. These issues are bigger than left and right. And absolutely, you know, anyone on the left, anyone, I would rather have a constitutional Republican than an unconstitutional Democrat, even though I tend to be left of center. So I really, you know, call on patriots across the political spectrum to see what we have in common in terms of cherishing our liberties, and together we need to join forces. I mean, we've been doing a lot of transpartisan outreach. You know, together we're more powerful than either side, quote-unquote, is alone in calling on every one of these leaders to toe the line. I'm very concerned, you know, just because Barack Obama is a constitutional scholar doesn't mean he's not going to be pressured by the same pressures.
Well, not only pressured, I think that, of course, he would have to be culpable. And I think the biggest key here, and this is, I think, what Naomi is really, really trying to say, and says it so beautifully in her book, Give Me Liberty, A Handbook for American Revolutionaries. What she's saying is that we are culpable.
Thank you. You're so great. I love this. Go ahead.
We need to step up to the plate. This is
exactly
where we come in. And if we don't take it, let me ask you a question, Naomi. Has America ended as we know it, or is it still in the process of ending, and can we save it?
We can save it. Thank you for that lovely question. And I just want to also just thank all these people, you know, who are there and sending me good wishes. I can feel that positive energy. You know, we came very, very close, and I think what we got was an object lesson. I mean, there have been other very dark times in our history, although I would say in certain ways, this is in some ways the darkest because we've never institutionalized torture before. But we should learn from the last 8 years how fragile liberty is, how easy it is to subvert it if we give up or, you know, sort of let ourselves get distracted or despair. But I think we should also much more positively take an object lesson that we have a lot of power to push back and restore our precious Constitution. And we've taken a kind of a big, like, you know, it kind of reminds me, like, what the citizens did on with this election kind of reminds me of that first step on the moon, because in a way it's a little step, in a way it's just a lot of people taking a few actions, you know, in the course of a few days. But it's a huge step in terms of people snapping out of this kind of torpor and hypnosis that we've been in, and starting to flex their muscles. If we, this is all about if the however many people were in that auditorium who very sweetly wished me a happy birthday, you know, go home and log on to myamericaproject.com or look in the last third of Give Me Liberty and choose one thing that each of them does. And it doesn't matter, you know, I'm not wedded to, are you going to write the op-ed, or are you going to, you know, run for Congress, or are you going to, you know, start your own nonprofit, whatever it is, or something much simpler. Are you going to, you know, hold a protest, or, you know, write to your newspaper, leak a story to a reporter? If millions of people do that, we start to strengthen and strengthen our revolutionary civil society, and they can't get us when we're all doing that. They just can't. I mean, that's the lesson. So it's really up to us. If we go back to sleep, very bad things are going to happen, because this infrastructure is there. You know, he hasn't rolled back FATA. He can, you know, wiretap his opponents now, and that's so tempting. The founders knew that it was. You know, we haven't dismantled Guantanamo yet. He wants to set up, you know, military commissions on U.S. soil. I mean, this Hydra is out of the box, but what could be so beautiful is a renaissance of really just the beginning. You know, I can see citizens taking these skills and powers and just building and building and building alternative institutions, really a revolutionary, a truly revolutionary time when citizens say, you know what, I'm not going to leave it to my Congress people to do politics for me. I'm going to do politics, you know, with the democracy commando teams that I teach people to form. Or, you know what, I'm not going to just passively accept what the mainstream media tells me to think. I'm going to create my own media. So many beautiful things can happen, you know, when we wake up.
Well, I, there's only a couple more things that I want to talk to you about before we let you go back to your lovely party with your lovely friend, Naomi. But, you know, I absolutely agree. One of the things that I think people are have to understand right now is that we are very empowered as a society here in the United States today. We know that we did it. We made an impact. We made change. We created change. Whether or not we can sustain the change or Obama can sustain the change, only time will tell. But I think that's one part of this that I think is very important. And I think a lot of people, including yourself, including writers like yourself, need to capitalize on. It's this momentum that we have now gathered and are just so full of ourselves, which is really good. So I hope that a lot of people will read this book and understand how much more power they really have. I can't recommend this book enough. This is something that will always be in my library. I know that. Now, the other thing that, and real quick, and I know that, and we're going to let you go after that, but I had to ask you this because this is a personal place for me. Naomi, you're going from issues surrounding the feminine to a handbook on revolution. Is that a stretch or not really?
I don't feel it as a stretch. I mean, I respond to issues as they arise in my own life. And, you know, for the first chunk of my writing career, as you know, I was mostly concerned with women's issues because I'm a woman. You know, I had babies, so I wrote about babies. And I, you know, grew up, and so I wrote about growing up. And I was very focused on that. But I'm a mother, and as I was watching, I'm a mother of two beautiful children, and as I was watching these storm clouds gather, I couldn't, as a mom, sit quietly and not try to protect them. I mean, really, everything I've sought to do is really to give my kids and hopefully, you know, everyone's, all of us together, giving our children a safe, free future. I knew enough about how horrible it is for children and women in police states that I, you know, wanted to do everything in my power to avert that. And with Give Me Liberty, I want my kids to know that they can do anything, you know that they're good enough to confront any congressperson, any senator, any president, you know, any lobbyist, any corporate head, and do that effectively. So, yeah, I feel like it's a very natural progression.
Well, I have to agree with you. I really don't think it is a stretch. I think that in the time of the feminine, the rise of our spirit and the rise of the nurturing and the resurgence of this kind of nurturing mentality in our society today, that this book is can give birth to true revolutionaries. Thank you, Naomi. I want to wish you a happy birthday. Thank you so much for interrupting your party, and please thank your guests for us. Whit, it has been an honor having you. We wish you luck, and we hope to have you back with us one day soon.
Please, I'd love to. Thank you so much, and thank you to all of you listening.
Oh,
take care.
Be well, dear. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Well, that's it, folks. I'm afraid Naomi had to leave, but she apologizes for cutting this short. Thank you very much, everyone. It's been a great night. We'll see you next Tuesday night.
One bright sunny morning in the shadow of the city wall by the relief office, I saw my people and they stood there hungry and I stood there wondering if this land was made for you and me. This land is your land. This land is my land. From California to the New York Island, the Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream water. Yeah, this land is made for you and me.